And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, today is August the 11th. And it's a hot day. Oh, it's very hot. In fact, we got another heat advisory. It's the 223rd day of the year, and leap year is 224th in the Gregorian calendar. Only 142 days left in the year. In the year 3114 BC, on this day, Mesoamerican long count calendar, used by several pre-Columbian Mesoamerican civilizations, to include the Maya, began. 2492 BC, the traditional date of the defeat of Bel by Hoc, progenitor and founder of the Armenian nation. In the year 106 AD, southwestern part of Dacia, which is modern Romania, becomes a Roman province. 355, Claudius Silvanus, who was accused of treason, proclaims himself Roman emperor against Constantinus II. In the year 490, Battle of Adda, the Goths under Theodoric the Great and his ally Alaric II defeat the forces of Odoacer on the Adda River near Milan. Odoacer was on the way to becoming the big dog, and he got taken down a notch. 1332, Wars of Scottish Independence, the Battle of Duplin Moor, Scots under Domhnall II. Earl of Mar, routed by Edward Balliol. 1473, the Battle of Atluk Belli. Mahmud the Conqueror of the Ottoman Empire decisively defeats Uzan Hasan of Akweunu. 1675, the Franco-Dutch War. Forces of the Holy Roman Empire defeat the French at the Battle of Konzerbruck. 1786, Captain Francis Light establishes the British colony of Penang in Malaysia. 1804, Francis II assumes the title of the first Emperor of Austria. 1812, Peninsula War. French troops engage British Portuguese forces in the Battle of Mahadahonda. Now, being able to say that properly is a victory. 1813 in Colombia, Juan de Corral declares the independence of Antioquia. 1858, the Eiger in the Bernese Alps is ascended for the first time by Charles Barrington, accompanied by Christian Almer and Peter Boren. 1898, Spanish-American War. American troops enter the city of Mayagüez in Puerto Rico. 1918, World War I, Battle of Amiens ends. 1919, Germany's Weimar Constitution is signed into law. I think that was after the abdication of the Kaiser. 1920, the Latvian-Soviet Peace Treaty, which relinquished Russia's authority and pretenses to Latvia, signed, ending the Latvian War of Independence. 1929, Babe Ruth becomes the first baseball player to hit 500 home runs in his career with a home run at League Park in Cleveland, Ohio. 1934, the first civilian prisoners arrive at the federal prison on Alcatraz Island. Alcatraz was originally home to a tribe of Native Americans, and then a fort was built there to protect the harbor. And then still later, it was I think privately owned for a time, and then a state prison, and finally the federal prison was built there. 1942, actress Hedy Lamarr, composer George Antheil, received a patent for a frequency-hopping spread-spectrum communication system that later became the basis for modern technologies and wireless telephones and Wi-Fi. Hedy Lamarr, imagine that. 1945, Poles in Krakow engage in a pogrom against the Jews in the city. They killed one and wounded five. 1952, Hussein bin Talal is proclaimed king of Jordan. 1959, Sheremetyevo International Airport, the second largest airport in Russia, opens. 1960, Chad declares its independence. 1961, the former Portuguese territories in India of Dadra and Nagar Haveli are merged to create the Union Territory Dadra and Nagar Haveli. 1962, Vostok 3 launches from Baikonur Cosmodrome. Cosmonaut Adrian Nikolaeva becomes the first person to float in microgravity. 1965, race watts begin in the Watts area. Excuse me, of Los Angeles. The Watts riots were quite... they were unparalleled in its day. 1960, nobody really knows for sure what started them. 69, the Apollo 11 astronauts were released from a three-week quarantine following their liftoff from the moon. 1972, the last United States ground combat unit leaves South Vietnam. 1975, East Timor. Governor Mario Lemos Paris of Portuguese Timor abandons the capital, Dili, following a coup by the Timorese Democratic Union and the outbreak of civil war between the UDT and the Fretilin. It's interesting. The most oppressive regimes always call themselves democratic. 1979, two Aeroflot Tupolev Tu-134s collided with the Ukrainian city of Dniprodzerensky and a crash, killing all 178 on aboard both airliners. 1982, a bomb explodes on Pan Am Flight 830 en route to Tokyo, Japan, from Tokyo to Honolulu, kills one passenger and injures 15 others. 1984, we begin bombing at 5 minutes. President Ronald Reagan, while running for re-election, jokes while preparing to make his weekly Saturday address on National Public Radio. Year 2000, an air rage incident occurs on board Southwest Airlines Flight 1763 when 19-year-old Jonathan Burton attempts to storm the cockpit. He's subdued by other passengers and eventually dies of his injuries. 2003, NATO takes over command of the peacekeeping force in Afghanistan, marking its first major operation outside Europe in its 54-year history. 2003, Jamaat Islamiya leader Ridwan Isamuddin, better known as Hambali, is arrested in Bangkok. 2006, the oil tanker MT Solar One sinks off the coast of Guimaras in the Negros Islands in the Philippines. It caused the country's worst oil spill. 2012, at least 306 people are killed and 3,000 others injured in a pair of earthquakes near Tabriz, Iran. 2017, 41 people are killed and another 179 injured after two passenger trains collide in Alexandria, Egypt. Well, a lot of births and deaths on this date in history. Holidays and observances. Christian Feast Day. Atract. Clara Vassini. Fiacra. Gogericus. John Henry Newman in the Church of England. Philomena. Susanna. Torinus of Evero. Tiburtius and Chromatius. Flag Day in Pakistan. Independence Day. In Chad, which celebrates independence of Chad from France in 1960. And in Japan, we have Mountain Day. Alrighty, what else have we got? We have... in 480, in the Greco-Persian Wars, Battle of Artemisium, Persian naval victory over the Greeks and an engagement fought off the north coast of Euboea. 1304, the Sea Battle of Franco and Holland forces defeat the Flemish fleet. 1492, Rodrigo de Borja becomes Pope Alexander VI. 1597, Germany throws out English sail people, and well they should. 1611, the Emperor Rudolf forces out the King of Bohemia. 1695, the English and French fleet capture Dunkirk. 1718, the Battle of Cape Passaro. The British fleet destroys the Spanish off Sicily. 1772, explosive eruption blows 4,000 feet off of Papadayanjava. 3,000 are killed. 1860, the U.S. had its first successful silver mill in Virginia City, Nevada. 1866, the world's first roller rink opened up in Newport, Rhode Island. 1877, Asaph Hall discovers Mars' moon, Deimos. 1896, Harvey Hubble patents the electric light bulb socket that had a pull chain on it. 1904, German-Italian General von Trotha defeats Herero in Southwest Africa. 1904, the Russian fleet in the harbor at Port Arthur is exposed to Russian guns on the hill above the harbor. Russian ships attempt to escape, but are forced back into the harbor by Japanese ships. 1908, King Edward VII of Britain meets with Emperor Wilhelm of Friedrichshafen, Germany. Main point of contention is the increasing size of Germany's navy. 1909 was first used in 1909 by an American ship, the Arapaho, off Cape Hatteras, North Carolina. 1914, John Bray patented animation. 1920, the first peace of Riga. Soviet Union recognizes the independence of Latvia. 1929, Persia and Iraq sign a friendship treaty. Persia was Iran. 1935, Nazi mass demonstration against German Jews. 1936, Chiang Kai-shek's troops conquer Canton. 1939, Sergei Rachmaninoff's last appearance in Europe. 1940, 38 German aircraft shot down over England. 1942, the British aircraft carrier HMS Eagle is torpedoed and sinks. 1942, Lieutenant General Montgomery makes a landing on Gibraltar. 1944, the French 5th Armored Division recaptures Sais. 1944, Klaus Barbie, the Gestapo head of Lyon, France, leaves for Auschwitz. 1945, 1945, the Allies refused Japan's offer to surrender on a condition that Emperor Hirohito retained his status. He was a, under the law of Japan, a god. In fact, when he was forced to admit on radio after their surrender that he wasn't a god, there were suicides all over the island. In 1950, Ethel Rosenberg testifies before the grand jury regarding allegations of spying for the Soviets. In 1963, now this is important, folks, there could be a written exam. The Kingston Trio were mystery guests on the game show What's My Line? 1964, race riots in Paterson, New Jersey. I didn't think they had enough people in Paterson to have a riot. Let's see what else we got. In San Antonio, there was, in 1972, there was Cheech and Chong Day. Whole town got high. Also in 1972, and you can file this under, things don't always work out like you want. Two IRA members are killed when a bomb they were transporting exploded prematurely. Okay. 1978, the funeral of Pope Paul VI is held in the Vatican. In 1984. That radio voice test that Reagan did in 1984 on NPR, the full statement was, he had just signed legislation that would outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes. That was not meant to go out, but unfortunately it did. In 1988, Al-Qaeda is formed in a meeting between Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and Dr. Fadl in Peshawar, Pakistan, with funding from the CIA, I might add. 1989, Voyager 2 discovers two partial rings of Neptune. 1990, Egypt and Morocco troops land in Saudi Arabia to prevent an Iraqi invasion. 1853. Now, this is interesting. The frigate Madagascar left Melbourne for London with more than 150 passengers and crew. In her cargo hold was nearly 3 tons of gold. It vanished completely. Never seen again. The Madagascar was originally built as a merchant vessel in 1837. used for carrying soldiers to India as well as passengers looking for an exotic holiday to the Indian subcontinent. In the hole, it had a box of specie that was money. 8 boxes of silver, 9 boxes of sovereigns, gold sovereigns, about 60,000 of them, 86 boxes of gold dust and nuggets. It weighed nearly 3 tons. In the money of the day, it was valued at over 250,000 pounds. Now that was, in those days, a pound was worth about $3. They think the ship was hijacked in the Pacific, turned north, and sank on an atoll about 1,500 kilometers southeast of Tahiti. There was a growing belief that criminals on board that the police didn't detect in court had taken over the ship. A more plausible explanation would have been pirates. They were still active in those days. Hell, they're still active today. Okay. We've been talking about a new book series I've got out called The Assassination Files. Now, everybody, as I said, knows that on November 22nd, 1963, John F. Kennedy was assassinated. And of course, thanks to the Warren Commission and the quiet urging of J. Edgar Hoover, it was immediately determined that the sole lone nut assassin was a man named Lee Harvey Oswald, who was himself assassinated by a man named Jack Ruby. Jack Ruby died in jail of cancer, though prior to his incarceration, he had shown no signs of having cancer. Now, based on the Warren Commission, who gave us everything we ever wanted to know about Oswald's elementary school records, and he was also guilty of the murder of Officer J.D. Trippett, and any other crime that happened on that particular day in history, he was eventually arrested sitting in a movie theater with the police looking for the president's assassin. The manager of the theater allegedly calls because called the police because Oswald snuck in without buying a ticket. And with everything that was going on, the police were so incensed that he would try to steal, watching that film without buying a ticket, they surrounded the theater and attacked it. Now, what had happened, and nobody's ever been able to figure this out, over the police radio came the announcement that the president's assassin was in the movie theater, and he was armed. Now, Oswald did have a gun, but interestingly enough, the gun didn't have a firing pin. Whoever put him up to it apparently furnished him a weapon without a firing pin, so that if he was cornered and he pulled it, we'd have what amounted to suicide by cop. Certainly, they didn't want Oswald to say what he knew. And the instead of shooting him, Oswald was just overwhelmed physically and hauled off to jail, where allegedly, other than saying he didn't kill the president, in fact, he said he didn't kill anybody, he wasn't questioned about anything. Well, it came out after the Warren Commission reported, long since been published, that he had been questioned by the FBI and by the police. And he had a one-on-one interview with Dorothy Kilgallen, the reporter. everybody involved in interviewing Oswald died mysteriously shortly after that. Now, even though at the time that Oswald supposedly on the sixth floor shooting the president, he was photographed in the doorway of the book depository watching the president. Now, a man named James Worrell saw a man running out of the back of the Texas School Book Depository minutes after the assassination. He jumped in the car and took off. He reported that to the police when they showed up. Well, shortly after reporting it, but before he could be formally interviewed by the Warren Commission, he died in a car accident. Another one of those mysterious one-car accidents, don't you know? Now, Oswald's supposed to have shot Tippit. No one's ever given a reason for it, or why he would even be there where Tippit was. But one witness refused to identify Oswald as the one that shot Tippit. His name was Harold Russell. Now, the loose theory the Warren Commission was trying to push, without appearing to push it, was that Tippit and Oswald were somehow involved in a conspiracy. Oswald's landlady said a police car pulled up out front and honked the horn and drove off. And right after that, Oswald ran out, got on the bus, and went to the movie theater. Well, Harold Russell refused to be swayed in his description of the man he said shot Tippit before he could be brought before the Warren Commission to testify. He was involved in a bar brawl and was accidentally shot and killed by a cop. Now, I mentioned the fact Ruby died of cancer. And yesterday I talked about two devices the CIA is known to have come up with. The Church Commission talked about them in their investigation of the CIA back in the 1970s. One was a gun that fired. It was an electrically operated gun, battery operated, that fired darts containing shellfish toxin. The dart itself was made out of ice, and it was fired with such velocity it would penetrate your clothes. It would leave only a red mark on the skin, but the ice would melt away, leaving the shellfish toxin to infiltrate your system, and its shellfish toxin is a toxin. It's deadly. The other device that they used and that they developed specifically to go after Fidel Castro was a cancer bioweapon. One of the people involved in the creation of this cancer bioweapon was a Dr. Mary Sherman. She lived in New Orleans. Two of the people who worked with her as couriers and what have you was David Ferry and Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, just before the Warren Commission started her New Orleans investigation of the assassination, she was found dead in her apartment. The belief of the investigators was she had murdered someplace else and brought back there and posed. In fact, I think they set fire to her. A very good book called Dr. Mary's Monkey came out about her murder. Now, one of the investigating officers at the scene of Kennedy's assassination found a .45 caliber slug. And it was immediately taken from the officer by a man who showed Secret Service credentials. Secret Service was adamant they did not have any men in the crowd. The deputy sheriff's name was E.R. Walters. He also helped in the search of the school book depository building. during the pursuit of a felon a short time later, he was shot and killed. They were never able to determine who shot him. And being high up in the law enforcement hierarchy was no safeguard either. William Sullivan was the number three man in the FBI. And he oversaw internal security as it related to the Kennedy assassination. Well, he was going to testify before the House Select Committee on Assassinations in November of 1977. And right before that, he'd already had a preliminary meeting with the members of the committee, and he was going to testify. Went on a hunting trip with some friends, and wouldn't you know it, one of the hunters thought he was a deer, shot and killed him. I guess deers wear bright orange safety vests. But the shooter got charged with a misdemeanor. Well, a lot of friends of Jack Ruby came in for some attention by the group behind the assassination. A man named John Crawford was a friend of Jack Ruby. And he knew that Oswald and Ruby were good friends. He was also a friend of Wesley Frazier, who gave Oswald a ride to work on November 22nd. He went on a plane ride in a private plane. Plane crashed. Then we have Reverend Clyde Johnson. He was going to testify about the relationship between Oswald and Clay Shaw. Now, Clay Shaw, if you'll remember, was charged by Jim Garrison as being involved in the assassination of Kennedy. There's a lot of evidence that Shaw had, in fact, been a CIA agent, or at least an employee of the CIA. And this Reverend Clyde Johnson knew that Clay Shaw and Oswald had a long-running relationship. Well, shortly before he was to testify for Garrison, Reverend Johnson was found shot. Death was never solved. Let's talk about James Pomeroy. He was another member of the mob that the CIA routinely used in their assassination plots. He was murdered right before he was to be called to testify. Then there's David Yaris, close personal friend of Jack Ruby's. And he was going to be called to shed light on Ruby's connection to organized crime and the fact that Ruby and Oswald knew each other very well. Well, shortly before he was to be called to testify, he was found dead. Murder was never solved. Now, of course, they had Inspector Clouseau investigating all this because none of the investigating officers ever determined there was a connection between all these mysterious deaths. Let's talk about William Pauley. One time, the U.S. ambassador to Brazil. He was well connected to both the Anticastro movement and organized crime figures. Also deeply involved with covert action programs within the CIA. He was going to be called to testify, but he was found dead of a gunshot wound. Immediately, it was because he was said to have had shingles, even though there's no proof of it. And shingles is a very painful disease. It was decided because he had shingles, that's why he committed suicide. No autopsy. Then there's Bill Lovelady. He was an employee of the Texas School Book Depository Building. The Warren Commission said he was the man standing in the doorway of the building that people who were there at the time said was Oswald. After the Warren Commission came out, Lovelady produced a striped shirt he was wearing that day. The man in the doorway was not wearing a striped shirt. And there's a lot of belief that it was Oswald standing in the door. Well, most of the photos were altered to replace the face of Oswald with the face of Lovelady. And what happened to Lovelady? Before he could testify for anybody, he died of a heart attack. How about Will H. Griffin? He maintained Oswald was an FBI informant, which, of course, Hoover denied with every iota of his being. And when he couldn't get Griffin to retract his testimony, Griffin died of cancer. Remember Mary's monkey and the cancer bioweapon? Let's talk about Rufus Youngblood, Secret Service agent. He was assigned to protect Vice President Lyndon Johnson that day in Dallas. According to, right before the shots rang out, a lot of witnesses saw Johnson slump down in the seat, so he was out of sight. Johnson later said that Youngblood threw himself on top of him as the shots rang out. But there's a photo that shows that Youngblood did not do that. So Johnson asked Youngblood to testify during the Warren Commission that he did jump on top of Johnson, and he refused. He said, "I won't lie." Mysteriously died of a fast-acting cancer. Dallas Motorcycle Patrol Officer James Cheney was riding just to the rear of the Kennedy car. Now, when the headshot was fired, Cheney was hit in the face with blood and brain matter. He thought he'd been hit. There was so much of it. Well, he was, he tried to testify about that. And, of course, the powers that be really weren't interested in hearing that testimony. He wouldn't shut up. Lo and behold, he had a heart attack and died. Now, this, him getting hit with all that blood and brain matter indicates a shot came from the grassy knoll. Had he testified, they would have had to have investigated that. But as I say, he died. Lee Bowers, who worked for the railroad, he was up in a two-story railroad tower located behind the picket fence on the grassy knoll. He saw men behind the picket fence and cars going in and out of the parking lot just before the assassination. He was supposed to testify to the Warren Commission, but he died in a mysterious one-car accident. His family believed he had been drugged, and of course the police refused to look into it. In his initial statement, he said just as the shots rang out, a flash of light drew his attention to this one area behind the fence at the top of the grassy knoll. An insurance investigator who investigated that auto accident suspected it was murder. Some years later, some of his friends began to talk, and they said he knew more than he had said about what happened, but he was afraid to tell. One of the things that came out from friends and families that Bowers had observed, but was afraid to say in public, that he actually saw two men with rifles firing shots behind the fence. But he was never able to testify to that. Mysterious one-car accident, don't you know? Now, reporter Jim Coeth managed to get into Jack Ruby's apartment before it was sealed by police, but after he had shot Oswald. What he found, and apparently he found something, was never revealed because he was murdered by a blow to the neck. Then we have Mona Sands, a Texas employment clerk who interviewed Oswald. They had another higher-paying job for Oswald and called Ruth Payne's house to tell him about it. Female on the phone said Oswald already had a job. And this was a period of time that Oswald had already started working at the Texas School Book Depository Building. Well, Sands was unable to testify in more detail about what she knew because, wouldn't you know it, she was hit and killed by a bus. Now, the official story is that Ruth Payne gave Oswald a lead that ended up with him having a job at the school book depository. But that's not really the truth. Then there's Rose Cherami. She was found dumped in a highway near New Orleans just a day or so before the assassination. Picked up and taken to a hospital where she gave an account of driving from Miami to Dallas with some Cubans who were going there to assassinate the president. She told her story on November 20th, 1963, 2 days before the assassination happened. Now, she'd worked as a stripper for Jack Ruby, was introduced to Lee Harvey Oswald by Jack Ruby, and knew that Ruby had strong ties to organized crime. On the day of the assassination, she was watching TV in the hospital and stated that Kennedy was going to be killed. Well, it was reported that Oswald had been arrested later in the day. She asked if Jack Ruby had been arrested as well. Well, in spite of the fact that they didn't want to do it, there was enough pressure brought to bear that investigators had to go get more details out of Rose Cherami. Unfortunately, she couldn't produce any more details because she was found dead on the highway. According to the story, she was hitchhiking on a remote Texas highway on September 4th, 1965. And supposedly, she was hit by a car and killed. What no one could explain was the gunshot wound to her forehead. I guess whoever hit her decided to make sure he had done a good job and shot her too. Then we have Thomas Davis. If you're getting the idea from this list of names I'm giving you that there's more to the story than we've been told, then you got the right idea. Thomas Davis was a gun runner who knew Jack Ruby very well and had connections to the CIA. In fact, he was probably a CIA contract agent. But his name surfaced, and the Warren Commission investigators wanted to talk to him. Wouldn't you know it? He was accidentally electrocuted and died. Then we have William Whaley. He was the cab driver who was supposed to drove Oswald to his rooming house after the assassination. Certainly investigators wanted to talk to him. Well, they discovered that he had died in a mysterious one-car car accident. Well, let's talk about Officer Roger Craig, member of the Sheriff's Department in Dallas. He publicly stated the rifle found on the sixth floor of the school book depository was a German Mauser. He said there's no way to mistake it. It's clearly stamped on the barrel. He also stated when he first saw the spent rounds by the sixth floor window, they were all lined up pointing in the same direction, just inches from each other. Now, if you've ever fired a bolt-action rifle, they don't land side by side, all pointing in the same direction. He also claimed to see Nasrallah run down from the school book depository and get into a Nash Rambler. Well, he talked to many folks about that, but he was found dead of a gunshot wound to the head, which was immediately declared to be a suicide. How about George McGann? Another underworld figure that ended up marrying Beverly Oliver. He was a close friend of Jack Ruby. Now, he was responsible for keeping Beverly Oliver silent for a number of years. And he was able to talk about what he knew about Ruby because he was found murdered. No autopsy. How about Albert Bogard? He was a car salesman who gave an account of Oswald coming into the dealership and test driving a new car. And Oswald said he was going to be getting a lot of money in a short time and he wanted to buy one. Well, Oswald didn't know how to drive. Didn't have a driver's license. Never had had one. Well, Bogard wasn't able to bring any more details to the table because he was said to have committed suicide in a car in a cemetery in New Orleans. Excuse me. How about Charles Tassana? He filmed a rifle being taken out of school book depository, which was not the Mannlicher Carcano that was touted as Oswald's rifle. Well, when investigators tried to follow up with him, he died of a heart attack and his film disappeared. Let's talk now about Bill Hunter, another reporter who was able to gain interest to Jack Ruby's apartment. Now, when the police arrived, he was kicked out. Hunter was never able to give an account of what he found in the apartment. Apparently, he found something that upset the police. He was accidentally shot by a Dallas police officer and died in April of 1964. If you remember the first reporter that I talked about, killed by a mysterious blow to the back of the neck. Let's talk about Eddie Benavides. He was a brother of one of the witnesses to the Tippit shooting. He was almost a spitting image of his brother, Domingo, who had witnessed the Tippit shooting. Eddie died from a gunshot wound to the head in February 1964. Now, not every member of the Warren Commission read from the same script. Hal Boggs was a congressman from New Orleans, a member of the Warren Commission. After the commission released its report, Boggs started to speak out that the report was not correct, and he firmly believed that JFK was assassinated as a result of a conspiracy. He also did not believe the magic bullet. That was one bullet supposedly wounded Kennedy and the governor, John Connally, and it fell out, pristine condition, mind you, on the stretcher at the hospital. Well, Boggs was asked to come support somebody running for Congress in Alaska. And they were leaving Fairbanks, I think, to fly to another location. The aircraft vanished, and Boggs was never heard from again. Neither the wreckage of the plane or any of the passengers was ever found. Now, this next individual, I actually knew. In fact, he recommended me for the Naval Academy. It's Senator Richard Russell from Georgia. He was also a member of the Warren Commission. After the commission report was issued, Russell started to have doubts about the report's findings. He said there were things coming out that weren't known during the commission investigation. Now, Russell swore he never wanted to serve on the commission in the first place. He'd been tricked into it by Lyndon Johnson. And even while serving on the commission, he said he had suspicions about Oswald and what the FBI had been telling him. He felt there'd been a rush to judgment about a lot of aspects of its conclusions. He felt that both the FBI and the commission were not following up various leads properly. And he expressed concerns and expressed doubts that the CIA could be trusted to give the commission the truth. He was another one who didn't believe in a single bullet theory. And he stated so in meetings. He originally wanted to write a dissenting conclusion to the Warren Report. But a lot of political heat was brought to bear and he was told it couldn't be done. Well, he went to Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Washington, D.C., January 21st, 1971, with complications from emphysema. He died. And after his death, a lot of his conclusions were vindicated. 1976, the Senate Intelligence Committee concluded the CIA had failed to carry out its duty to investigate the assassination. 1979, the House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded the FBI failed to investigate adequately the possibility there was a conspiracy. David Yaris, a hitman that worked for the Chicago mob and was a very close associate of Jimmy Hoffa. He was also known to be deeply involved with several anti-Castro Cubans in Miami. Well, somebody decided he knew too much and he was murdered in 1974. Richard Kane. He was another Chicago mobster who was quick to pull the trigger. There were a lot of rumors he knew of a great deal and had something to do with the Kennedy assassination. Well, there was a move afoot to subpoena him. But before he could be served, he was sitting in his normal coffee shop in Chicago when two men walked in and shot him. John Paisley was a CIA officer who was believed to have been working on stuff related to the Kennedy assassination and Lee Harvey Oswald. In 1994, he went out on a boat. Presumably a little fresh air and enjoyment. He was later found shot in the head. How about Ralph Siegler? Army counterintelligence officer worked closely with the CIA in covert actions in Mexico. He said to have known about many internal files on Oswald and the Kennedy assassination. Later found in a hotel room an electrical lamp wire stripped of its insulation wrapped around his body and he was dead. In spite of the fact that there was clearly evidence of torture, the death was ruled a suicide. His family noted some of his teeth are broken. His nose had been broken. A lot of strange bruises on his body, but the officials refused to investigate. It was marked a suicide, and that was it. And, of course, we have Lee Harvey Oswald, shot down in front of 60 police officers by Jack Ruby. He died at Parkland. The doctor who was working, trying to save Oswald's life, was called away from the operating room by Lyndon Johnson in order to get a deathbed confession. Well, that was Dr. Charles Crenshaw. Now, Robert F. Kennedy, in talking about Lyndon Johnson, said Johnson lies all the time. Lies continuously about everything. In every conversation I have with him, he lies. He lies when he doesn't have to. He's mean, bitter, and vicious. Well, there's a lot of documentary evidence available in government records that supports the premise that Oswald and Ruby were friends, even though the Warren Commission went to great lengths to say they never knew each other. Among those who knew that they were friends was Judith Baker. She said Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby knew each other since Oswald was a teenager. And there are a lot of claims that Oswald worked for U.S. intelligence. Beverly Oliver said she was introduced to Oswald by Jack Ruby. And Ruby introduced him by saying, "This is my friend from the CIA." Donnell Whittier was Jack Ruby's mechanic. He claims he saw Ruby and Oswald together all the time. They were close friends. Raymond Cummings was a cab driver who drove Oswald and David Ferry to Ruby's Carousel Club, which was a strip joint there in Dallas. Carol Jerrigan claims he was in the Carousel Club and saw Oswald and Jack Ruby sitting together many times. Bill DeMar, he was the MC at the Carousel Club. He said Oswald was in the club a week before the assassination. Penny Dollar, who was one of the dancers at the club, said Oswald was in the club all the time. Bill Chester was a close friend of Jack Ruby. He told a number of people Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald knew each other very well. March 1964, Chester died of a heart attack. No history of heart problems, but what can I say? Thomas Davis was another close friend of Jack Ruby. He told several people Oswald and Ruby knew each other very well. In September 1973, he accidentally electrocuted himself. Ralph Paul was another close friend of Jack Ruby. He knew that Oswald and Ruby had been together before the assassination. Paul died from a fall in his home. Marilyn Delilah Wally, a dancer at Jack Ruby's club. She had seen Oswald and Ruby together many times right before the assassination. She was shot to death by her husband. And Jim Garrison said Lee Harvey Oswald had Jack Ruby's unlisted telephone number in his address book. Well, I talked about the fact that Dorothy Kilgallen was found dead sitting up in her bed. Mrs. Earl Smith was an assistant to Dorothy Kilgallen. Now, Kilgallen was the only reporter allowed to interview Jack Ruby, and she said she told her publisher she's going to blow the lid off the Kennedy assassination. Then she was found dead, and all the records disappeared. 2 days after her death, Ms. Earl Smith, her close assistant and trusted confidant, was found dead. They never did reveal the cause of her death. And then Dr. Nicholas Chetta, who did the David Ferry autopsy. He was going to be called to testify for Jim Garrison. Wouldn't you know it? Another mysterious death by heart attack. Well, we've come to the end of tonight's show. This is part two of the Assassination Files. Tomorrow night will be part three. I got enough people who died in regard to this assassination to go the week. So until tomorrow night, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show saying have a truly great evening.